See what love the Father has given us, that we should be called the children of God, and so we are. I heard those words probably more than 100 times growing up at Southminster Presbyterian Church in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Every time there was a baptism, my pastor would hold up the newly baptized baby for us all to see. He would lift the baby up in the air as if there was any doubt about what we were being invited to see. And he would say, "See what love the Father has given us, that we should be called the children of God. And so we are." I've heard those words my whole life, but it wasn't until my last semester or so of seminary that I understood what was really being said. Those familiar words from 1 John came alive for me one day as I was sitting in class. The class was called Word and Act in Christian Worship. It met just once a week for an hour, but it turned out to be one of the most important classes I took in seminary. In Word and Act, we learned about and actually practiced some of the things that ministers do in worship. We had a paper to write, as I remember, but most of our grade was based on performance. Week after week, we observed and critiqued as our classmates stood in front of the class and gave the invitation to communion or tripped over the words of the institution as they tried to rip apart a stale loaf of bread. We worked on the movements of the Lord's Supper, performed a mock wedding, and conducted a funeral based on a case study that we were given. I still remember that the first wedding homily I ever preached was for Maxine and Carl, a couple which was simply the figment of my professor's imagination. But the highlight of the class was baptism. We learned about and practiced both the infant and adult varieties, but the emphasis was definitely on baptizing babies. This was not only for theological reasons, but for practical reasons as well. There's much more that can go wrong when you are holding a baby in your arms. The part of the infant was played by Annie, a life-size, very worn, scantily clad doll, who not surprisingly slept through the entire thing. But sometimes, to give us the full effect, the professor would start screaming and crying from the back of the room. He did this especially when a student seemed a little too nonchalant about the whole thing. It all seemed so absurd on some level, baptizing a doll, but this was no joke. The Reverend Dr. Charles Bartow, the Carl and Helen Enger Professor of Speech Communication and Ministry, was serious when it came to baptism. He was a giant of a man with a booming baritone voice and diction that was the stuff of legend. And so when he got up in front of the class to demonstrate what he wanted us to do, it was hard to suppress the laughter. There he was, a distinguished professor speaking tenderly to a baby doll in front of a bunch of know-it-all seminary students. Dr. Bartow was known for overdoing things. He was dramatic. Not only to make a point or to emphasize a certain movement, but to reinforce those things which were often the first to go out the window when you get out there and when you do them and you're kind of nervous. So you overdo it in practice, the theory goes, so that you can be understood when it really counts. And so when he got to the words, "And so we are," he looked right out at our class and it seemed right into our eyes. The intensity of his outward glance helped us to know that he was talking to us, this congregation of students. He was reminding us, the witnesses of this mock baptism, that we are indeed the children of God. I can't describe it, but there in the midst of that absurd experience, I heard those words in a way I'd never heard them before. But why are they so important? Why not just say, "See what love the Father has given us, that we should be called the children of God"? After all, if we had said at the conclusion of the marriage ceremony, "I declare that Maxine and Carl are now husband and wife, People might be a little surprised if I added the words, and so they are. So why does the apostle add these words, and why do at least some baptizers continue to say them today? I remember looking at those words from 1 John over and over again. I wanted to understand what the apostle was saying. The text says that the proof of God's love is that we are called the children of God. But it's one thing to be called a child of God. It's quite another to really be one and to know it and to live your life like it is the one thing about you that is most true. The Apostle John wrote his letter to a church filled with people a lot like us. People who had been baptized, people who had been Christians for a while, people who were beginning to forget who they were and whose they were. The apostle knew, as we also know, that it is very easy for those who were baptized as infants to forget, ignore, or even reject the marvelous identity that baptism proclaims. It can become a mere fact of our personal history, an entry in our baby books, and then forgotten. I love the story that one writer tells of a child recalling and telling people that he was baptized. But then he was quick to add, "I've been vaccinated too." It was obvious he didn't really understand what baptism meant. And it's not really surprising. How often do you remember the day of your baptism? How much does it mean to you from day to day? So it was for those people, people like most of us who were beginning to forget their baptism, that those apostles' words were being directed. And that's why the apostle writes about God's amazing love and how we are called his children and how we are not only called God's beloved children, but we actually are God's beloved sons and daughters here and now. And that makes all the difference in the world for how we live, not just at church, but everywhere, all the time. We are God's beloved sons and daughters. I am. You are. The apostle was talking about becoming who you already are, living as a disciple of Christ in whose name you were baptized, and doing it today. Those who oppose the baptism of infants are right when they point to the danger of it becoming a mere convention, an empty act of no significance to the child. It can become a social tradition, or worse, a kind of magical act, or a sort of heavenly insurance policy in the eyes of the church. But at its best, baptism is an act of the church in which a child of Christian parents, or any child with Christian sponsors, is brought within and welcomed as a part of the family of God and given a Christian name. All baptisms are believers' baptisms. In the case of infants or young children, the parents declare their own faith and promise to nurture the child in the community of the church. And the congregation, you, accept the responsibility for the spiritual growth and nurture of the child. I'm going to be asking you that question in just a few moments. Above all, we believe that the grace of God is at work in the sacrament of baptism. And we look forward to the day when the child will, by God's grace, profess their faith and choose the way of discipleship, just like our 9 confirmants did a couple weeks ago. Baptism is first and foremost about what God has done and what God is doing in choosing us and calling us by name. God's grace is not dependent on our profession of faith, not even on our understanding, but it is the starting point for the lives we live in response to God's gift of God's love. Today, we remind ourselves of our baptism. And I don't just mean the impossible task, at least for most of us, of thinking back to that actual day when water was poured on your head by some pastor. But remembering your baptism, by holding on to the reality that we all belong to the family of God, that we are marked with the sign of Christ. We are called the children of God, and more importantly, we are the children of God. The challenge for us is to accept from day to day the promise and the assurance of our baptism and to respond with our lives, to become more fully who we already are. We hear still sometimes about so-called born-again Christians, as if somehow these people have had some special experience of the Spirit that sets them apart from us ordinary Christians. Now, I don't want to dismiss people's real religious experience, but such a label can undermine the meaning of baptism. Every Christian has been born again. I tell you every week, the old life is dead and gone, a new life has begun. The sacrament of baptism reminds us that grace that is given new every morning to cleanse away, cleanse us from our sins, to strengthen us in our faith, and to keep us on the Christian way. When I think of the renewing power of baptism, of remembering our baptism, I think of the great church reformer Martin Luther. In many ways, he was a man who struggled daily with what it meant to be a child of God. He was overwhelmed by God's love. How else could he, as a sinner, even stand before God? But the thing that kept Luther going, that gave him the courage to face the world and to reform Christ's church, was the memory of his baptism. When he woke in the morning, he would stand and touch his forehead and say the words, "I have been baptized." His simple act was a reminder of who he was and who he needed to become. Becoming who we are is a lifelong process, but we can find encouragement and direction every time we see a child of God washed in the cleansing waters of baptism. To live out our baptism is indeed to be born again, to renew our total dependence on God, like that of a baby in her mother's arms. To press on with the openness, the sense of wonder, the curiosity, the imagination of a growing child. Friends, see what love the Father has given us, that we should be called the children of God. So we are. Rejoice and be glad. And never die.